everybody, welcome to this week's new episode of Zach on Film. It's just me and Steven Schleicher this week.
Hey, what's going on, Zach?
Oh, you know, just living the dream, Steven. Living the dream.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, man. So we watched an interesting movie this week.
Yeah, what'd you think of Shaft?
Well, Shaft is what, like a
1971
film.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of was the second and the biggest of the blaxploitation films.
Right.
Which is a term I had heard before, mm-hmm. but was never quite sure what it actually meant.
So did you look it up and do some research on
blaxploitation? I read a little bit on it.
So what can you tell me about it?
It's kind of like an exploitation film, but it's with black people.
Yeah, but I mean, so what are they exploiting? I mean, what's the point of what are they trying to do in these kind of movies?
I couldn't quite figure that out from my reading on the Wikipedia. I just read a lot about what the films were, kind of the criticisms of the genre, mm-hmm. from different groups like the NAACP and
So when we talk about exploitation films,
yeah.
we're talking about films that are trying to make a buck off of a certain culture or class or group of people.
Okay.
Right. So when we talk about blaxploitation, we're talking about black exploitation films,
mm.
movies that are mainly designed to attract the black urban audience member,
okay.
and a white tangential audience,
okay.
as well. But mainly it's targeting black.
Okay. Can you give me an example of great of a exploitation film? Have we watched anything like that?
No, because we haven't watched a lot of B movies.
Is that a point of the exploitation films?
They're usually done very cheaply,
okay.
right? And they're usually done again to cash in on a particular theme or topic or whatever. So Night of the Living Dead, for example, is an exploitation film.
Okay.
That would fall into this category. I mean, when we talk about exploitation films, we have biker films, cannibal films, the shock, gore porn, mm-hmm. type films, revenge films.
Okay. So it's pretty much just any super targeted.
So you know what? Spaghetti westerns.
Yeah.
Fall into the genre of an exploitation film.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So like, would a Christian movie be an exploitation film?
That would be an exploitation film. So anytime you watch your, Kirk Cameron movies,
yeah.
those would fall into that as well, especially when he does his stuff that's the, the apocalypse, everybody
the
Left Behind series uh-huh. stuff. Those would totally be exploitation films.
Would Tyler Perry's movies be blaxploitation?
No. Well, that's a good question, because I'll admit that I have not watched any of Tyler Perry's Madea films.
Okay, I have.
The thing with blaxploitation, they usually are following in, unfortunately, playing on stereotypes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're supposed to be trying to initially, especially when you look at a movie like Shaft, and we'll have to look at a little bit at the idea that, Shaft in the book, as he was originally written, was not a black man in mm. the books. He was a white guy. And then Parks, who was the director on this, cast what's his name?
Country.
Richard Roundtree.
Roundtree.
Yeah. To be Shaft in this. But
mm-hmm.
so, initially, they were supposed to create a central black hero
mm-hmm.
that people could look up to.
Okay.
And these were normally in the original three or four blaxploitation films when they first came out, were showing the urban black hero.
Mm-hmm.
Then there were some that spun off that. So you had Southern blaxploitation films, which looked at race and slavery.
Uh-huh.
The ones in the urban areas would look at race relations and corruption in the police force, those kinds of things. But they were also supposed to show a strong black man, masculine, secure with himself, mm-hmm. not afraid of anything.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who in the way that they portray Shaft in this movie, someone with a lot of class, someone who was just really put together and very sure of himself.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, because a lot of these films, even though they may have had black directors, even though they may have had a lot of black actors and actresses in them, still were being controlled by Hollywood,
right.
which was predominantly white
mm-hmm.
and still is predominantly white.
Yeah.
Right. And so what ends up happening is, and this is the problem that you'd mentioned with the NAACP, is with the success of Shaft, right? You have a studio here that's like banking a lot of, actually putting up a lot of money and saying, hey, we need to get this movie out and it, hopefully it will make a lot of money.
Yeah.
And so what happens is Shaft comes out and it's a huge success. Mm-hmm. And suddenly the studios are like, oh, is this what people are going to go see? And so they started cranking these out faster and faster and faster, to the point where instead of creating new ideals for the target audience, they started reinforcing stereotypes.
Mm.
And so that's where you have a lot of the, and again, I'm using this in the terms of the language, not as in a derogatory way, but that's where you get a lot of the jive talk mm-hmm. starts to pop up. And that's where you start to see comedic portrayals of Black inner city men mm-hmm. and women too. I think the greatest example of how far blaxploitation went as far as creating negative stereotypes, at least during this time period, is when you watch Starsky and Hutch and you're looking at a character like Huggy Bear.
Mm-hmm.
That would be an example of they've really pushed this too far. And instead of trying to build up relations, build up the viewership, they're really talking down to them and reinforcing stereotypes in these films. And that was the ultimate downfall of the blaxploitation film by about 1978, because as you said, NAACP got involved, and I forget what the other organizations that got involved as well. But basically they said, hey, look, this is not doing our community any good. It's not doing anybody any good except for the studios. They are exploiting us, obviously. Mm-hmm. And so I think it was like by 1978, 79, we kind of saw the end of what we typically define the blaxploitation genre. Mm-hmm. Although there are, as we'll see in the movie that we'll watch next week, there are other movies that have parodied it or tried to jump on the bandwagon.
Right.
And some that, you know, even now, when you look at, I'm not thinking of Superfly TNT, but in the Jackie Brown's a good example. Pootie Tang is what I'm thinking.
Oh, yeah.
That's an example of a modern blaxploitation movie in which they're just really making fun of the genre, mm-hmm. but they're doing it in a way that, again, is reinforcing the whole point of what the blaxploitation films were.
Yeah, it was really interesting when I did read a little bit about it, how quickly that cycle of it went from like legit genre
right.
into parody
right.
into like gone really fast. Like it was a really tight cycle, it seemed.
Right.
Obviously, probably.
Well, and that's because and that's
what
because,
they did to it.
Depending on how they're looking at it,
yeah.
Blaxploitation films include a bunch of subgenre stuff, which, you know, fractures kind of your overall view of it.
Oh,
so
sure.
You have things like crime, which includes your Foxy Brown type movies. Then mm-hmm. you have your martial arts stuff, which was really big at this time because Bruce Lee was still around at this time. It was before his death, so the marriage of the Black film and the martial arts film together made for some really powerful, interesting storytelling.
Yeah.
There you had westerns, you had horror, you had comedy, you had nostalgic films. You know, one of my favorite films as a kid that I used to watch with my parents was Uptown Saturday Night with Sidney Poitier and Bill Cosby in it. Really great film about these guys that are trying to turn these inner city kids around.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great film. So there's all these that are out there. But unfortunately, when you flood the market with a product,
yeah.
it doesn't matter what that product is, it waters down the main goal of what you're trying to get out.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, the NAACP and others get involved, and the Southern Christian Leadership Conference,
that's
the National
was,
Urban
yeah.
League Coalition, they formed the Coalition Against Blaxploitation,
mm-hmm.
and they basically said, this is not what we want. And I guess Hollywood listened.
Crazy.
Yeah. So it slowly started to fade out. But I still argue that you can still find plenty of examples of that still around mm-hmm. today.
I was impressed that the genre decided it was even worth continuing after the first film, because the first blaxploitation film, I believe, has the greatest movie title ever. I don't know how anyone ever decided, oh, we should really jump on that. The first one credited for a blaxploitation film
mm-hmm.
movie's title is Sweet Sweetback's Bad Ass Song.
Yeah,
five S's.
Ass
yeah, it's the yeah. greatest movie title ever. I don't know why they continued after that.
So one of the interesting things that we see in the blaxploitation genre is the use of the funk and soul music in the soundtrack. So
yep.
usually if you hear that, you know that could be a trigger. and the fact that you have a predominantly black cast. And what's really cool about Shaft, and this is why I wanted you to take a look at Shaft this week, is because this is the first time that we saw an actor, Richard Roundtree, being cast in a lead role.
Right.
And I think this is a huge thing, even though Richard Roundtree had been involved in a bunch of other commercial work, small film work and other film work. He was not the lead in the piece.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of what why this is so interesting, even though it came out in 1971.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking now with what's going on at the Academy and what's going on in the Emmys and everything about representation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, wow, we're less than 40 years away from, you know, Richard Roundtree being featured in a major Hollywood feature as the lead.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's kind of important.
Yeah, it's such an interesting thing because you're looking at how long movies have been around. It's not that it was the first black lead ever. Mm-hmm. It was
it was a major studio,
and that it then had to take you know, a form of a really low budget movie that incredibly ended up essentially saving MGM.
Yeah.
From the sounds of the history of that and Shaft, of MGM is on the brink of just going out of business,
as they have many times,
and they like give, I've seen different reports, either somewhere between $500,000 to $1 million to make Shaft, and then it just goes and destroys the box office and brings, again, anywhere, between like $7 million to $10 million range.
We see this a lot, right?
Yeah.
I mean, even we look ahead a few more years to Star Wars, where it's like the studios didn't want to give as much money as they wanted to, and they got a huge reward at the end. And so that's one of the nice things about movies like we saw Dope, where it's a super small, limited budget, but it does extremely well. It gets a lot of attention and kind of changes the way filmmakers are moving ahead. In fact, we've seen, isn't the guy, the director of Dope, he's doing the upcoming Flash movie, I believe.
Something like
that. Yeah. So, you know, these are really great stepping stones and the reason why you want to watch smaller films like this. So Gordon Parks, who is the director of Shaft, in regards to what Shaft did to blaxploitation films, he says blaxploitation films from Shaft onward were largely defined by a relatively greater degree of corporate control and a relatively lesser degree of autonomy on the part of the filmmaker. This film was created less to impact black consciousness and more to simply show a fun film which people could attend on a Saturday night and see a black guy winning. It was intentionally created to appeal to a black urban audience along with the contiguous white youths.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he had said in some interviews back in the day.
I was really happy to read a little bit about Gordon Parks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that his first film is called The Learning Tree, and it is actually based in Kansas, based off of a little bit of his life and his autobiography that he wrote, because Gordon Parks is actually from Fort Scott, Kansas.
There you go.
Hey, Kansas we did it. We have a director.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was actually kind of one of, and that was also his first film, got accepted into the Congressional Library for the Film Registry, so... Mm-hmm. Good on you, Gordon Parks.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really great. I mean, you could go and read a couple of biographies of Gordon Parks that are out there, but yeah, it's a good, and it's interesting, especially by the time Shaft rolls around, he's a much older person than the photojournalist that he was in his prime in the 1940s. I mean, he's a much older man, but I don't know where you watch Shaft. I watched it on iTunes, and there's like a 10-minute, like, it's called The Making of, and it's really it's really like 10 minutes of Gordon Parks kind of a little bit of talking about who Shaft is, but then you see some behind the scenes stuff of the shootout that goes on in the stairwell early on in the film. And so you see some behind the scenes of that, you see him directing and trying to direct these young actors. Then you see him directing the barroom scene where they're getting smashed over the head with the beer bottle.
Love it.
Then you see him sitting with Isaac Hayes as they're talking about, let's play this song. And then course, the whole band is in this little tiny room. They all start playing the Shaft theme song, and then you see him in the editing room, and you know, just looking at a couple of scenes and how they're cut together, and talking with the editor of this. So, it's the editor of Hugh Robertson, who, if I'm not mistaken, was the editor of Midnight Cowboy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, Hugh A. Robertson.
Yeah, so Shaft as a whole kind of plays like a general detective story.
Well, and
a private eye type story.
It is based on the Ernest Tiedemann or Tiedemann books.
Mm-hmm.
Also by John D.F. Black. And so it's an adaptation.
Okay.
But my understanding is in the books, John Shaft is a white detective that has good relations in both parts of the community. And so that's how he's able to navigate both the white areas and the black areas with ease. And Gordon Parks said, hey, if we're going to make this, let's cast a black actor to play John Shaft. And ever since then, the character has been black.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so really, if you've seen really any type of private eye detective film, this kind of works that same, especially if you look at anything in that genre from the 70s, it plays very similarly to that, where you have Shaft walking the streets a lot, talking to his folks, trying to hunt down leads, being sly with his witty remarks to his cops that he's friends with, but rassles him up a little bit just because he doesn't he's not really one of them. He works on his own.
Right.
He's down with the ladies.
Yeah,
he's always talking about how he's about to go get laid.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately kind of wins in the end.
Mm-hmm. And we see that, right?
Yeah.
Where we see these are what someone assumes that the ideals of a young black man are in the 70s,
yeah.
Where he's sexing it up.
Yeah.
He doesn't take sass from the white man.
No.
He's aggressive.
Yeah.
He'll, just as the theme song says, who's the black private dick that's a hit with all the chicks?
Oh, is that what the theme song?
Yeah, come on, man.
I was just fucking on the pow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. It's great. If you, you should listen to that again and again and again. So the main crux of the story is that Shaft is hired by one of the gang leaders in Harlem.
Mm-hmm.
His daughter has been kidnapped by an Italian mob because some shenanigans are going on.
Yeah.
And the problem is if Shaft can't get Bumpy, the Harlem gang leader's daughter back, it's going to erupt into a race war. And that's what the cops are worried about. And so Shaft is in this middle of, what am I going to do? I've got to do what's good for my community, but I also can't let a race war break out in New York because that'd be bad for everybody. And so, he follows the leads, finds out where she's at, and there's a lot of gunfights and a lot of dead bodies. And in the end, Shaft wins.
Yeah.
And then he goes on to do, I think, 5 more films.
Yeah, there's that was confused because I was buying it on iTunes and I saw a film that came out.
Shaft in Africa.
Oh, is that what I thought it said? Shaft in America, and that's why I was really confused.
Shaft in Africa.
Yeah, that would make way more sense because it's like, why is it called Shaft in America? Is this first one not in America?
No, the next film the next year was Shaft's Big Score. Then you had Shaft in Africa in 1973.
Oh, okay.
And then you had the 2000 version of Shaft with Samuel L. Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a TV series. Also, if you look on your iTunes, I didn't have a chance to watch this, but if you look on the version of iTunes, I don't know if you rent it or bought it. But there, I didn't even know this, that there was a Shaft television series, and they have one of those episodes included in your iTunes bonuses.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't check into this farther, but they said there is a remake in Shaft in the works. That was as of 2015. There wasn't any update in the Wikipedia about that, so that might be dead. That might be alive. I guess we'll find out.
If it's 15... If it's 15 and that's when they're putting it together or when they're moving forward, yeah, they probably wouldn't even have a script ready and be able to look for people until 16. So, they could still be doing that. So I want to know what your overall impressions of Shaft were, because this is, again, a film that came out in 71, really early. It's not your contemporary films that we've watched. I mean, we saw what happened with the Something of 69 series.
Yeah.
So this is just a couple of years afterwards.
Yeah.
And I want to know what your overall impression is of this movie.
I thought Shaft was incredibly boring.
Really? Why?
Yeah. Oh, my God. It was so slow. I ended up rewatching it again over lunch, and I rewatched it in my lunch period because I fast-forwarded through a lot. And the movie is great if you can watch it in about 15 minutes. Like, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
But besides that, I mean, it is a lot of just walking and really slow-paced conversation, and then more walking, and then...
Oh, yeah. Some of the acting in this is really bad.
Oh, yeah. And the acting is not good.
Where they're in the coffee shop when he's waiting for the Italian mobster to come meet him, and the waitress is just like...
Yeah.
Duh. you know, just really bad, bad acting.
Yeah, there is one scene that I really enjoyed and I thought was really well done, and that's when he is in the bar and, like, getting the two mob guys arrested. I thought that scene worked
really well.
Mm-hmm. I thought everything else was just...
I think it can be great. I think it can come off as boring, but you have to think that in a detective, you have in a detective story. And again, I've said this before, why detective movies don't work as well today is you have to see them doing the footwork.
Yeah.
There's a part where Shaft is going to look for what's his name? Ben, I think is the character's name. The member of the black, not Black Panthers. I forget what they're called in this movie. But he has to do a lot of walking around to find these people. It also gives you a chance to listen to some funky music.
Yeah, absolutely. The music was good. It was just,
it's only 100 minutes. I mean, it's a 90 minute film.
That's what I thought going into. I'm like, oh great, we're gonna breeze right through this, man. This is not a long movie at all. And then it felt like 3 hours.
Shaft has a woman that he gets to make love to.
Two women.
Well, the other one he picks up at a bar because, you know, the first one's his girlfriend, right?
Oh, well, he makes love to that second one.
And then in the bar sequence, there's another woman, Linda.
Yeah.
That wants to get to know him, and he takes her back to her place, and she just can't wait to get in the shower with him. So.
Yeah, and then later he's like, you're great in this sack, but you're horrible after.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, whatever, I'm on the phone. Please go away.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah,
I found it to be interesting.
Right.
I was happy to watch a detective movie again. Mm-hmm. I was incredibly happy to watch a film where they're discovering what a zoom lens is as we zoom in on everything and every person. I was really happy to watch that again because we haven't seen a movie that just abuses zooms for a while.
Right, right.
But besides that, man, it was really a movie that if they could even take 20 minutes out of it, like really just a tight, like,
Where would you take 20 minutes out of it?
I mean, I would take 5 minutes out of so many different, like that last scene as they like just like go after the guy.
Yeah.
It was so long.
Yeah.
It was so long, and like only like four people ended up dying, but there was like 20 guys that had to get suited up, and they all had to have ropes and hoses and jump through a window, and it was too much.
It's a build up of the suspense, right?
Yeah, but if it's so boring.
The other thing too, and I think that this is part of it, because I wasn't bored. Well, there may have been one scene, certainly the coffee shop scene, but the scene right before the bar. I think you could have cut some more of that stuff out. I agree with you. There's probably 5 or 10 minutes you could have cut.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't bored because, again, this is something that's 1971, done on a super low budget.
Yeah.
And is shot on location in New York.
Yeah, that was also great. I was really happy to see how far New York has come as a city. Because every time we watch a movie from the 60s, the 70s, like, wow, this city is garbage.
Yeah, if you look, New York, I think, was the murder capital of the world during this time. Let me see. Murder capital of the world.
I mean, you see Shaft walking around, and it's just dirty, and everyone looks really sad, and everything's gray, and everyone's like, why did we come to America? This city is garbage. And that, you know, that turned around and New York's great, it has its flaws, as Mall City does, but it's just really interesting to see the shift of New York City through film, because it is this place of, you know, it is this place of opportunity, but it's also a city that is not welcoming and is dangerous, and it just looks incredibly dirty.
If you look in 1971, population in New York, 18 million people, there were 1,800 murders. So about 1% of the population was murdered. Is that right? 1%? About 0.01% of the population was murdered in that year. 72 to over 2,000 murders. So, I mean, we're talking about 3 or 4 homicides. These are murders, not just
murders.
People dying.
No, no, no.
These are people being murdered per day.
Yeah. Right?
It was not a good time. And this is why. So there are a couple of things. Shaft has gone on to be just its own big thing. Mm-hmm. Dynamite Entertainment, which is a comic book publisher, they had a series of Shaft comic books that came out not too long ago.
Cool.
And the first arc that they did of that is really fascinating because it, again, involves some of the characters that we've seen in this movie, but mainly Shaft as he's he comes to find out that there's a bunch of weird land deals going on so people can buy the land to build the World Trade Center on the on the cheap.
Okay.
And it's a fascinating story to read because a lot of it is based on facts. And if you haven't had a chance to see, what is the Baz Luhrmann Netflix series?
The Get Down.
The Get Down. Mm-hmm. If you haven't seen that, it also takes place in and around this same area when housing developers, property owners were trying to just get anything out of their business, out of their buildings, out of their tenements and apartment buildings and whatever, to where they would just burn the building down for the insurance money.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a very interesting time. I mean, I would never go to New York in this time period. Apparently, though, I did as a young child. My parents took me there.
Congrats.
Thanks, Mom and Dad. but
you could have been a Marvel character almost.
I could have been a Marvel character almost.
If only they would have been murdered.
But I mean, when you start to see the switch in power to now I forget the mayor's name after that took place in the 70s. He's the one that really cleaned up Ed Koch. He really cleaned it up and turned Times Square from, you know, a den of prostitutes and strip clubs and everything to the marketplace that it is today of where people actually want to go. So that's the other kind of neat thing about this is that time capsule aspect of being able to see New York City in 1971 and shooting in Harlem at the time was something that I think is really kind of cool. And it did really define a film genre. I mean, it really set it up and told people this is what we can do with film.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to have a white star in order to make money. I mean, the budget of this thing was $500,000 and made $13 million in 1 year. So that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah. There's so much that is good about Shaft outside of the movie, like what it did for genre, how it gave, you know, black actors, black directors more opportunity to make films in the future. You know, it saved a company. It, you know, it did all these things, had a great Oscar-winning soundtrack by Isaac Hayes. There's a lot of stuff and great stuff all around. But it was just, I couldn't really get super attached to the film. And I didn't think the action was, again, I have to give it, you know, you have to you have to shift your idea of what action is back into the 70s. But even when you look at stuff we saw in 69, I think that action
was the bigger budget,
really good.
Bigger budget.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. What? Well, it wasn't.
I mean, if you look at,
what am I thinking of?
The Wild Bunch. Yeah, if you're looking
Was that a pretty big budget?
I would imagine it's more than $500,000.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, it's probably $3 or $4 million.
Yeah.
So you're looking at something. I mean, this is literally, hey, here's some money. Go do something with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think what they were able to do with it is pretty impressive. And this is at a time where you're seeing squibs still being used for gunshots and everything and sugar glass and all that for some of the action sequences. Yeah, some of it's going to look cheesy. But again, in 1971, this would have been something that was like, wow, that's kind of neat and impressive.
It's not even the cheese factor. It was just the pacing and shot selection and editing of action scenes. I didn't think did great. I liked the use of the giant fire hose at the end. Like that would really hurt. I'm like, get away from me with that thing. But there was just, for me, it was just too slow. A lot of just cityscape walking that, just didn't do it for me this time around. I mean, there's still some really cool stuff about it that I enjoyed. You know, I really liked the portrayal of Bumpy.
Yeah.
Because I thought that was an interesting, especially the first time we see him is when he comes into Shaft's office and he's kind of laying out.
Well, because he's already sent two thugs after Shaft and Shaft didn't throw one out the window, but is pretty close to throwing him
out the window. Right. And so Bumpy comes and he pretty much lays out the story for what we're going to watch about his daughter being kidnapped and the mob and everything. I thought that was an interesting character portrayal as this, he's a pretty large dude and worried about his daughter, and he gets very emotional, which is not something that I expected to see from, you know, this big, powerful gang leader. That I thought was really interesting character wise and how they made him like that. You don't really see that in the rest of the film because I believe they go back to like his office again later, and he's, you know, kind of more stern. Maybe it's because he's on his turf and things like that.
Right.
But when you first see him with Shaft, he is pretty vulnerable and is like, "Hey, man, here's some money. That'll get you started." like, go find my daughter, because mm-hmm. that's what really matters to mm-hmm. me. Which I thought that was an interesting character thing. To me, the lot of the actual police officers seemed like odd characters.
Stereotypes of, as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, stereotypes upon stereotypes. And, yeah. and again, as we said, that's kind of the biggest problem with this. Instead of trying to break new ground,
mm-hmm.
it's just reinforcing stereotypes. Mm-hmm.
Did you ever watch the Samuel L. Jackson remake?
I did.
How was that?
I will honestly say I like this one better.
Okay.
Than the remake.
What was it? I mean, was it just like a modern type of kind action of,
yeah.
film?
Yeah, it's basically it was the modern version of Shaft
yeah.
with Samuel L. Jackson as Shaft 2.
Okay.
As John Shaft the second. And Richard Roundtree does make an appearance in that movie. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, it's kind of I forget what the plot was. I believe it was a missing girl or a girl who had to go to court to testify against somebody, and Shaft had to protect her, and I forget what went on throughout the whole thing. It's been a while since, because that movie came out in 2000,
right.
I want to say. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I remember seeing it just on a lark, and I just thought it was okay. And you're right, you know, this movie isn't fantastic. I mean, it's not, you from the technical side, from what it's trying to do, it's not a fantastic film. When you look and see what Clayton Riley had said of the movie in 1971, he said it's mediocre is the only word that describes the work of Gordon Parks, the director of this nonsense.
Ouch.
Inept in its inept is the kindest thing to say about the performances of both Richard Roundtree as John Shaft, a black private eye on the prowl for kicks in the Big Apple underworld. So yeah, he didn't have a lot of nice things to say about the movie either.
Yeah, that's pretty harsh.
But I think though when you look at where does this fit in the grand scheme of all films,
mm-hmm.
you could look at a bunch of other films that came out in 1971. This one will still be remembered today by more people than a lot of those other films that came out in 1971.
Yeah, it's definitely an important film. Even outside of what it actually accomplished on screen, mm-hmm. you know, just for cultural reasons and, you know, film industry reasons. It's a mm-hmm. really important film. And even obviously its box office success is going to make a film rememberable because, you know, a lot of people have seen it.
Although now that I'm looking at all the films from 1971, it's like, maybe I spoke a little bit too soon, because we have Andromeda Strain comes out that year. The Barefoot Executive from Disney comes out that year. Bedknobs and Broomsticks comes out that year. Billy Jack comes out that year. And that's just in the A's and the B's. So, yeah, there were a lot of films that came out that year. Dirty Harry came out that year, which Ooh. We watched.
No.
Didn't we watch that one? Did
no.
not watch Dirty Harry?
No.
I swore we watched Dirty Harry.
No, we watched Good, Bad, and the Ugly and other
We've never
Eastward.
Watched Dirty Harry.
Uh-uh.
All right.
Yeah.
We'll have to correct that.
Somewhere down the line, we'll watch another Western. Is that a Western?
No, it's a Dirty Harry Cop in San Francisco.
Oh.
I could have swore we watched Dirty Harry.
No, we definitely didn't, though.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay, well, we'll watch that. Not next week, though.
No.
But we'll watch it.
Oh, what other... I mean, actually, as far... I mean, I guess those aren't all the films from 1971.
Oh, no.
But I have heard of Shaft.
Right.
Like, I knew... I probably could have... If you showed me a bunch of posters from 1971 and said, pick out Shaft, it probably would have been pretty easy. But it is definitely an idea or a name that's in pop culture
mm-hmm.
enough that I actually knew what it was
mm-hmm.
in theory of what Shaft was. So, I mean, it's definitely still relevant, I guess would be the word to say, of what Shaft is mm-hmm. in culture right now.
Now, have you had a chance to watch Luke Cage?
The Netflix TV series?
Yeah.
No. But I've heard good things.
Well, and the reason why I thought maybe you had, because some of the themes that we see going on, and again, I see some of the things that Luke Cage is trying to do,
mm-hmm.
make commentary on what the role of the modern black man is in his community and his society,
mm-hmm.
Expectations forced upon him, the way the community treats the young black man.
Mm-hmm.
All those things are in Luke Cage, which remind me of a lot of the things that we see or what were the attempts were to be made in blaxploitation films. So for me, when I see Luke Cage, I see all the positive things that the blaxploitation genre was supposed to be trying to do
mm-hmm.
As opposed to just, hey, let's take money from this demographic that we haven't typically gotten money from before.
Mm-hmm.
So I see these themes running in Luke Cage that I feel were somewhat similar in Shaft.
Is that a character trait that you see from Luke Cage inside the comics from Marvel?
I don't know.
Oh.
I don't read it enough to tell you.
What about when I don't know when Luke Cage started as a character.
In the 70s.
Was it around this same time, though?
Yeah. 60s and 70s. Yeah, yeah.
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 So,
But no, Luke Cage in the 70s would have been the same way as what you would see a little bit of Shaft in there as well.
Okay.
You know, the sass talk, the, you know, being put down by the man, always trying to fight for his rights, those kinds of things. Oh,
wait, I've read some Luke Cage back from the 70s. Yeah, definitely has that vibe of what
72
came out from blaxploitation films of what he was. So, do you recommend if Luke Cage for people?
The Netflix series? I think it's good. I think there are certain people that will complain about this movie, and I'll be completely honest. I have seen people on Twitter say, hey, there's too many black people in this TV show. And it's like, well, are you thinking about where this story takes place and who it's about and whatnot? Mm-hmm. But I think it's really interesting. I think it's really, we had a big long discussion on the Major Spoilers podcast, one of the bonus episodes where we were talking about, you know, if a villain is trying to do something for the good of his or her community, but they're doing it via illegal means, does that make you more or less sympathetic for the villain? And I think that there are times when you look and see what all of the characters in Luke Cage are doing, you can see how they're trying to help and better their community. Each one is doing it in a different way. But the idea is, hey, we need to build up our community. We need to be stronger as a community. And when we stop doing these, when we stop killing each other and when we stop getting cops from killing us and doing all these things, our community is stronger. And I think that that's an overall powerful message in there, but I know a lot of people won't care about that message. They just want to see sweet Christmas and a lot of fighting. And there's a lot of that in Luke Cage too.
Right.
So I think that you will enjoy it.
Yeah.
I mean, if you enjoyed, did you enjoy Daredevil?
I have actually never watched Netflix. I don't watch that many things.
You should watch.
I've heard more good things about Luke Cage than any of the Marvel
stuff.
Now
that you
have
seen Shaft, I think you will appreciate Luke Cage.
Okay.
Yeah, I really do. Now, unfortunately, as I said, Shaft had some serious repercussions in the film industry and in blaxploitation films in that now we have to make these movies starring black actors and black actresses, and eventually it all devolves into stereotype. What does that do to real black actors who are trying to get their foot in the door in Hollywood? And so next week, it is making fun of blaxploitation, but it is the Hollywood Shuffle.
Okay.
And we've talked about it a little bit before. It is, now I forgot his name off the top of my head.
Richard Pryor.
No.
Dang it. I was just going for anyone.
Townsend, is that his name? Yeah. Robert Townsend. That's who it is. Robert Townsend is a young actor who is trying to make it in Hollywood as a big star, trying to get his foot in the door.
Mm-hmm.
But every time he tries out for something, he sees it as just reinforcing all of the stereotypes that he knows is bad for his community.
Mm-hmm.
But they do it in kind of a very tongue-in-cheek, funny way. It was a very powerful movie to come out in 81 is when that movie came out. 87, sorry. Because it really kind of opened the doors for a lot of people to say, oh, look, well, there's some really good actors and actresses, and what's going on with representation in Hollywood and those kinds of things. So I know we're talking a lot about it today in modern times, but even in 87, we see a lot of this going on. And I think Hollywood Shuffle is a really good movie that you will enjoy a great deal. So we're going to take a look at that next week on Zach on Film.
I just want to say, it's still so crazy to me that, you know, you look at this and how it started to open up, you know, actors of color for different roles and how, like, still in a couple months, that's 20 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And how super relevant that conversation still is today. Especially
that's
when you look
like
at
almost 30 years ago, not 20 years
ago. Oh, yeah, 30. My math is horrible.
Yeah.
How common that conversation is all the time. I mean, you have like Aziz Ansari gets on stage when he wins an Emmy for his show. It's like, hey, thanks, white dudes, for writing super stereotypical Asian performance. So I could do this one thing and everyone thinks it's groundbreaking.
Right. And so that's what. Robert Townsend's character, Bobby Taylor, has to kind of ask himself as he's going through all these auditions and seeing the racial stereotyping in Hollywood, as he's like, what am I willing to do to get to this end? And if you want to see even a more modern take on this, have you ever watched this? Again, it's a Netflix series called Black Mirror.
No, I've actually been meaning to again and not watching things.
So
wanting to.
It's getting a lot of attention right now because of season three and some of the topics that are covered in the first episode. But I went back to season one when it was still a BBC production, and there's only three episodes in that season. The third episode in that is What Would You Do for Fame? And it's played out there. And interestingly, the central character is a young black man who has to decide, what am I willing to do to get the message out, or fame, celebrity? I mean, you can read it in a lot of different ways, but you get to see whether will this character sell out or not sell out. And that's kind of a big deal.
Interesting.
So it's a topic that will continue to go on and on and on and on.
Yeah.
I think probably for another 20, 30 years, but we'll talk about that more next week when we take a look at Hollywood Shuffle.
And it's a comedy. So that's
a comedy. A
switch up.
Be aware though, Zach.
Yeah.
You will feel super uncomfortable with this because there are a lot of racial slurs in this movie.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm just giving you a heads up right there. I mean, think of the worst racial stereotypes, and then Townsend turns it up to 11.
Oh, all right.
For impact, for purpose, smack people in the face and say, hey, yo, this is what's going on. So
All right.
Be aware that... a lot of racial slurs.
Well, that sounds like a great topic for next week on Zach on Film. In the meantime, everyone, you need to do this right now. Head over to majorspoilers.com. You can find this podcast posting page. Give your thoughts on Shaft and any of the conversation we had, and get ready for next week as we take a look at Hollywood Shuffle. While you're there, click on that Amazon.com button over the right side of the page. It'll take you straight to Amazon, where you can do all of your great Amazon shopping. Probably can buy Shaft on Blu-ray if you want to watch it. It's not going to cost you any extra when you do that, but a little bit of that money will come back to Major Spoilers to help keep shows like this and so many more coming into your podcast listening device week after week after week.
And, you know, you may not even be buying anything from Amazon, but maybe you have a couple of dollars that you just have jingling loose in your pocket every month. You can also donate those to Major Spoilers by becoming a Major Spoilers Patreon at patreon.com/Major Spoilers. Every little bit helps, like I said, as little as $2 a month. Helps keep the light on and keep the servers running. We got to keep those squirrels fed so they can spin the cage and turn the generators.
Absolutely.
So head over to patreon.com/major spoilers.
And we'll see you next week on Zach on Film.
This podcast is copyright 2016 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.